At the state capitol, at the end of the legislative session in June, much of the conversation around changes to the state's criminal justice laws was focused on making it easier for incarcerated New Yorkers to obtain parole. At the same time, though, occupying much less of the political oxygen in Albany due to Democratic control of the state government, was a push from some Republican lawmakers to overhaul the parole process in the opposite direction, essentially making parole inaccessible for some inmates. To discuss this issue more broadly, as well as specific ideas to change the makeup of the state's parole board, we're joined by Assemblyman Mike Lawler, a Hudson Valley Republican. Welcome back to the show, Assemblyman.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
So I want to start our conversation by talking about the concept of parole. What do you think of conditionally releasing incarcerated New Yorkers after they've served a length of time in prison that makes them, I guess, eligible for parole as decided by whatever judge sentenced them however many years ago?
Right. So obviously we've been going through a series of reforms, and the objective certainly has been on the part of many of my colleagues in Albany to try and get individuals out of jail under the guise that, you know, corrections is about correcting behavior and rehabilitating people so they can reenter a polite society. I think in many instances, that's true. And when you're talking about nonviolent offenses, certainly, and, you know, people who have had issues with drugs, you know, you want people to be able to live a productive life, and you want them to be able to reenter society and hopefully not fall into the same issues that got them into the prison system in the first place. However, when you're talking about some offenses and some criminals, there has been no understanding on the part of many of my colleagues that you have to differentiate. And so, for instance, in my district, we've had a situation where a 16-year-old girl was sexually assaulted and murdered nearly 41 years ago. Both of her assailants, ultimate killers, have now been paroled by the state parole board. They are unrepentant. They committed one of the most
heinous... What do you mean by that, by the way, unrepentant?
They've never accepted responsibility for it, and which is really what is a remarkable about the parole board allowing granting them parole. And I think when you look at some of these offenses, we as a society must be able to say that certain offenses are just too heinous, that certain crimes do not warrant parole, no matter how well the criminal has adapted to life in jail, no matter how much time has passed. In this particular instance, the 89-year-old mother of the victim, Lois Bohovesky, is still alive and is now having to relive the trauma of what happened nearly 41 years ago. As both of Paula's killers are released from prison and get to live amongst the general society. And I think when you look at what my colleagues have been pushing for, and including recently passing less is more at the end of session, that basically says, you know, technical violations should not send you back to jail. Well, one of the technical violations, for instance, would be drinking and taking drugs. And the problem with that is, in the case of Robert McCain and Richard LaBarbera, the two assailants in Paula Bohovesky's case, they committed those offenses after a day of drinking. So drinking was part of their conduct. It was part of the crime. And the fact that something like drinking would now, which would be a technical violation, would not violate parole is problematic. And that's where I think some of my colleagues, in their zeal to release criminals back on the street under the premise that the criminals are the victims and not the actual victims of these crimes, in their zeal to do this, they're not differentiating. They're not recognizing that some crimes require these types of punitive sentences. And that, to me, is very disturbing, and it's something that really needs to be reevaluated as we forward.
So you've drawn a pretty strong line in the sand there with regards to these violent crimes, these crimes that I think you've described as being, you know, particularly heinous. Is the issue, though, with the parole board, or is your concern really with the sentencing judges who are deciding at the time that you can serve so many years in prison and then, you know, you're going to be eligible for parole?
Well, I think it's a combination of all factors, right? So,
if that's the case, then do you think that there should just be more use of life without parole sentences?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the bills that I've put forward is called Paula's Law,
right,
which would say that anyone who sexually assaults and murders a child under the age of 18 would never be eligible for parole. And, you know, I think in this particular case, certainly had that law been in effect at the time, it would have prevented this situation. But because at that time in you know, 1980, 81, when these two assailants were sentenced, you know, they were given the max at that time. And so I think what certainly needs to be evaluated as we move forward is an understanding that we have to differentiate, and that, you know, as a society, the idea that somebody could rape and murder a child, or the idea that somebody could kill a cop, for instance, somebody who's there to uphold the law, and that they would be released, is disturbing. And I think if we can't differentiate between offenses, and we just want to blanketly say that people need to be released from prison, whether they reach a certain age or a certain number of years has passed, that is a very dangerous direction that we're taking our state in. And I think if when you couple it together with all of the other quote-unquote reforms that have taken hold, we're seeing the results. We're seeing what's happening in New York City and across our state, where there is a rapid rise in crime and violence, and it is directly attributable to the policy decisions that are being made in Albany.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about parole and the parole board in New York, and our guest is Assemblyman Mike Lawler, a Hudson Valley Republican. Broadly speaking, there seems to be two competing approaches that parole board members can take with their duties. There are those who might look for a reason not to grant parole, and then there's those who look for reasons to grant parole. Where do you see yourself in those two camps, with the caveat that it's really an imperfect binary setup I'm offering you?
Well, look, I think the main objective of the parole board, in my opinion, needs to be to ensure the public safety in making this determination as to whether or not somebody warrants parole or not. And I think if the parole board's objective is to, you know, clean out the prisons and get as many people back on the streets, that is not looking at what is in the best interest of the public. And that is not looking at each individual case based on its merits and based on the conduct of the individual. And I think when we're looking at our criminal justice system, the only way that it works is when individuals are judged based on their conduct and their character. If we are making broad determinations in our criminal justice system, if the parole board is making broad determinations based on a ideology and how they view corrections, then they're not doing justice for the victims and the victim's family, and they're not doing justice for the public and ensuring that only those who really merit parole are granted it. And again, it goes back to my larger point that we need to be able to have differentiation, and we need to be able to judge these things based on the facts and the individuals involved, and not based on broad macro points of view about how corrections and parole and justice should be administered.
Well, you mentioned, though, at the start of your answer, the public safety aspect of parole. And that's something that the Department of Corrections highlights in terms of the consideration, those statutory requirements that members need to consider, and they can include whether a person is a risk to public safety. And so if you have someone who's eligible for parole, and say they are in their 60s, like Robert McCain, or 70s, like some people are, as they're being considered, statistics show that they're not likely to commit another crime like what they did previously. So should the board then lean towards releasing these people as long as they, you know, have some sort of plan for reintegration into the community?
Again, I think it really depends on the crime. You know, Robert McCain was 20 years old when he committed this offense. So he's a 60-year-old man, and as far as I can tell, based on all reports, a healthy 60-year-old man. So this man now has potentially, based on life expectancy, let's say 18 to 20 years to live in society. And as a relatively healthy 60-year-old man, certainly, you know, he could engage in a further criminal act.
Right, but most studies say that people who are released when after serving especially a long period of time don't commit another crime.
Well, I would disagree with the studies, but my point
What do you mean? Like you just like reject the studies? Like
I reject the premise of that. I think there's a bigger issue, which is certain offenses do not warrant parole. And I think in this particular instance, when you're talking about the sexual assault and murder of a child, where Robert McCain took a chunk of concrete and hit the 16-year-old child over the head, tried to sexually assault her, and then his co-assailant sexually assaulted her and stabbed her to death, and she was left in a pool of her own blood as she was walking home from work at the local library, to me, that individual, and both of them, never should have been given parole. And the fact that this parole board decided in their infinite wisdom that he should have been granted parole, in my mind, is an absolute disgrace. And each and every member of the New York State Parole Board should resign in disgrace.
You've talked about the effect some of these parole decisions have on the either survivors of crimes or in cases where the victim is no longer with us because they were murdered, on the family members and friends that they left behind. What sort of weight do you think those people should have in determining decisions about parole? For example, if they say, you know, this person should never see the light of the day, or if they say, you know, we understand that this person has, you know, repented and turned the other cheek, and that's what we want to do. How should those be weighed?
Well, I think their opinion certainly should weigh heavily, not just on the minds of the parole board, but in the minds of legislators as we seek to pass, you know, future bills related to parole. I think victims, inclusive of their family, should have a very large say in this process. I think the individual offenses and the individual conduct must also weigh into the situation. Obviously, there is an emotional aspect of these crimes and these decisions, but there also must be the clear, hard facts and evidence, which weigh into it. And again, it goes to back to my point that you have to be able to differentiate, which is why I put forward Paula's law, which is why I think other laws need to be put forward so that certain offenses, which society can clearly acknowledge are heinous, the individual is not even eligible for parole. And so that this parole board and future parole boards don't even have the opportunity to make such a callous decision as they've done here.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblyman Mike Lawler. Suleiman, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.